Welcome to the Nattercast for the season premiere of Breaking Bad, episode 501, Live Free or Die, starring the adventures of Walter Heisenberg White. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, here as always with my lovely wife.
Sion Shankle
of Shankle Studios, and our special guest caster for the week.
Andrew Littlefield.
Of Littlefield Studios.
Yes. And I also write a blog called Oscar Blogger, where I talk about films that have won Best Picture because I have seen every one of them.
Which you're my hero.
You're a better man than I am.
Yeah, that is so awesome.
You know what? It's a great way to kill a conversation.
Yeah.
Because anytime someone says, you know, that choice this year at the Oscars really sucked, I can always say, you know, it was probably better than Cimarron, but not quite as good as Cavalcade. It just kills every
This is the best idea. This is like the best idea for a blog that I have ever heard, because every year we complain that the Oscars just pick the wrong thing.
I mean, famously,
like Ordinary People and Dances with Wolves. It's like, what are you guys even doing?
The greatest show on earth.
The greatest show on earth.
Totally.
Well, it's like very few of us live through the greatest show on earth thing. There are those of us who remember the horror of Ordinary People.
Yes.
And so you're taking a hit for the team here, man. You have seen every single Best Picture.
And
compared it to what else was up, right?
As well. Right, yeah. At the end, I say, did it deserve to win?
Was it better than Psycho? Was it
How many entries do you have so far?
Gosh, I'm up to Gandhi.
Wow. You got into the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I started, you know, way back in 1928, 29 with Wings, which is okay movie.
Right.
Oh, the first silent film never won Best Picture. And the only one until...
The Artist.
The Artist.
Yeah. Wow. So it's like a book ending.
Right.
Yeah. It's like 80 years of film between silent films.
I love how, though, I mean, these days, mainstream, you know, has gotten so far away from quality, in my opinion, that literally to find the Best Picture, they had to find a French silent black and white movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's either that or like Green Lantern, right?
But they had Hugo. Hugo was pretty good.
I loved Hugo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hugo.
Yeah. And that was a relatively mainstream film.
Yeah.
But, you know, still.
Yeah, still. And having seen the two, I think I would have given it to Hugo myself.
So would I.
Yeah,
so would I. I enjoyed
better.
Both.
And they're similar films, actually, in a way, because they're both Hollywood romantic or French new film, you know, film production romantic in the case of Hugo. But they both romanticize filmmaking.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And they're both, they both romanticize the past. They both show silent stuff. I mean, the days of silent film, that's really interesting. So.
There we are. And so speaking of blogs and such, I'll give you our contact information. You can reach us, send us your viewer mail to nattercast@gmail.com. And if you're listening and you haven't done it yet, if you would please subscribe and rate us over at iTunes, because that's how we stay up high on the iTunes ratings, and we want to be well known for our podcast over there. And where all the action is, though, is over on our Facebook page, if you want to join us on Facebook.
Yeah, that's becoming really fun.
It's becoming a very popular destination for us.
There's some really good jokes and humor and references and people, you know, playing games with each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's really just a fun nice time over group. There. And it's growing slowly but steadily. So come on over there. And but I cannot emphasize enough, if you have not hit us on the iTunes, even if you don't like our cast, still give us the 5 stars. What's it to you? And it benefits us. You know. So
it's a polite thing to do.
Is there anything else you want to cover, honey? Do we have any? We have news about.
Well, I'm in the middle of production, and it just took a really big, interesting turn for the better. I'm expanding the script and. Brought on James Anthony Cotton.
Who we should promote a little bit as well.
And you want to say James Anthony Cotton, because there's also another James Cotton who is a big musician as well. And he's a musician and actor I've worked with before, and it was great. So.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
So just my head's really busy in that.
Without further ado, then, let us break Bad back into the first half of the final season.
I mean, this is the buzz on the net, not just among our friends, but people we don't know and in different parts of the world and stuff. It's been everybody's been waiting for this.
Oh, this is like
this is huge.
This is like the end of MASH or something. I mean,
this is better.
Well, in terms of anticipation,
it's just you really can feel like
you
finally
really feel
people
it.
Who didn't. weren't as smart as we are and early adopters and got watched the first episode from the beginning.
I knew this was
people are catching on now, and this season is just like whoosh.
This does kind of happen with shows. I mean, if you remember The Shield, I think a lot of people dropped out and then watched last season.
Yeah, I was an early adopter on that too.
It seems like once a show's wrapping up, everyone's like, "Oh yeah, that was good. I think I'll go back to watching."
The Shield had
a bit of a
dip in quality.
It was a bit erratic.
Yeah. About in the second and third season, you know, but then it popped back up in the last two seasons. So the last season was phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought the last season was great. Fantastic. Well, again, because I think, you know, everyone's like, okay, we want to go out on a big high note, so let's do our best story. And the audience is like, oh, there's closure. I think I'll watch now. You know, that may be part.
Well,
of
so it. I think now so far, The Shield is the best anti-hero ending. That we've had on television so far. Vic Mackey's fate.
I'd be curious to see. And if that happens here
with
for
Walter
Breaking
White,
Bad.
Because he's a very Vic Mackey type of guy.
Which is a good thing to bring in what the opening scene was.
We'll roll right into our cold opening. So we cold open with Walter at the Denny's with the Grand Slam making a 52. He's doing it, playing a little 52 pickup.
Bacon game.
Out of his bacon. Yeah. Now, first of all, that's a callback right to the pilot where Skyler brings him his 50th birthday bacon on the pancakes. I also thought it looked like a nuclear detonation.
I didn't catch the 52.
Like a mushroom cloud. Like this is going to be the end of Albuquerque or something.
I don't think it's going to go that dark.
So we know that this is a year after where we are now in the show. After the death of Gus Fring.
Yes.
Or so. Because Walter is about to turn 51.
Yes. Right. And it throws in a whole bunch of information that we don't know about yet. We know he's using a fake ID. We know that he's far, far away from where he is now, far from home. He looks different.
Well, we don't know how far from home he is.
Well,
because he's got New Hampshire plates.
Right.
But
okay,
she said, how long does it take
car.
To get here from New Hampshire? And he said 30 hours. So he's still in the ABQ. He just has a car from New Hampshire.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. That's possible. And of course, the big question, why is he buying a huge machine gun?
And I looked it up here. This would be an M60. This is a very popular Vietnam era vehicle mounted machine gun, heavy anti personnel anti vehicle machine gun ordnance that is used to wipe out villages and take down helicopters.
Knowing him, he's got a plan to go into the DEA office and shoot all the officers that are going to testify against it.
Right.
Something like that. Something insane. You know.
He's all by. What I loved about it is he's all by himself. Mm-hmm. So we don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Is he going to save Jesse? Has Jesse turned on him? Is he going to after? Is Jesse dead and he's going after Hank? Is Hank dead and he's going after Jesse? Where is Mike in any of this? We don't know where anybody else is on the chessboard.
Yeah.
And all we know is that Heisenberg thinks he needs a machine gun to solve his problems.
Maybe he has to blow up the IRS building so that he doesn't go to jail for the.
But one of presumably this 52 is going to come near the end of next year's run. And which
52 pickup.
52 pickup, exactly.
And there's only 16 episodes left, right? Oh, 15
after
this
one, yeah.
So that's quite a...
Which means that this scene actually invalidates one of my predictions, which is that Walter will be initiating a zombie apocalypse to save his own ass. Because we saw the blue meth in Walking Dead.
With the machine gun?
Well, no. Because I've had this since Walking Dead, because we saw blue meth in Walking Dead.
Wow.
Right. So Daryl has blue meth in his medicine.
I think that may
cabinet.
Have been an in joke.
I know, but I was kind of hoping that Heisenberg would start zombies.
I don't think so.
So I thought this was. I mean, so Breaking Bad loves the cold open.
Yes, and I love the way they do it.
Yeah, I like. I didn't really like the payoff of the season three one with the season three that had the plane crash.
Yeah.
Or was that two? It was three, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, two was Tuco et al.
Right.
I didn't like the payoff because I felt like it was a, bait and switch. You know, I felt like this was clearly, they were supposed to make it feel like there was going to be a big battle at the White Household and it just turned out to be an airplane crash.
It was still pretty big.
But it was very dramatically done, I thought.
Yes, it was.
So, all right, we have anything else on the opening? What about that shot in the bathroom? I really, where he's like looking at the mirror and he can't see the mirror.
You know, I just like the opening shot of the food and we see his hands come up and we're not sure it's him yet.
Yeah.
So I like that. And they kind of play with that. Like, okay, why are we here? Who is eating this? You know, and then 52 call back to the first, you know, it's him.
Be interesting if the run of the show is precisely 2 years. If like the very last episode is, yeah.
He dies on his birthday.
Right. Oh, and then they also do the now, as I guess you have to do, now it's just ubiquitous, the Tarantino trunk scene.
Trunk shot. Yeah.
Point of view trunk.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was listening to a commentary on The Simpsons, and there's a scene where Homer opens up the trunk and they have the view from, obviously not the camera,
right,
in the trunk, and they said they did it before Tarantino. So as with everything, it goes back to The Simpsons.
We should also mention that Andrew is a Simpsons fundamentalist.
Simpsons fundamentalist.
Fundamentalist.
Good, that's good.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm fundamentalist about.
So the only other element I have here is we have another usage, although I think they're just teasing us on this now from now on, of Chekhov's cough. Chekhov's cough is the principle that if you see a character coughing at any point, they clearly have inoperable lung cancer. And Walter coughs on his way out to the right. Parking lot. You mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, which means and he takes a pill.
And he takes a pill.
And he has his hair, so it's. I think his cancer has come back, and he's probably going to not choose
right
to go through chemo again.
And he's a dead man walking. And he's taking
and he doesn't care.
And a dead man has nothing to lose.
That's right. Which was his original position on this whole thing, is I'm a dead man, I got nothing to lose. Right. I might as well.
Deal drugs.
Right. So full circle. Maybe Heisenberg's coming full circle.
Yeah.
But is he going to do something for good or for evil?
I don't know. So let's get some some ideas in. Presumably, this machine gun is going to be used in some sort of final confrontation, although it might be at the end of this season. Mm. I don't think they're going to push a whole year into this season, though, with only 8 episodes. But they might. Who is he going after? I think with that kind of ordinance, he's going after. He's not going after law enforcement. They're going to take him down too quickly.
No, yeah, it wouldn't work.
I think he's going after some badass bangers who are in town.
It could be whoever backed Gus.
That's what I mean. I think it's Madrigal people, you know, and it's like Inception. It's just corporations just have these squads of hitmen that can just chase you across Albuquerque.
Of course they do.
Cool.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. I think.
So then we go to commercial. We come back and we have Skyler on the phone with Walt, and this is moments after we left the Lord and Lady Heisenberg.
Lord and Lady Heisenberg. That's good.
And she's like, do you know about this? Gus Fring is dead. The DEA.
Yeah.
He's like, I what? He's like, at that point, you stop talking to him on the phone.
This is an open line.
Skyler. Let's just not have these hushed conversations. Yeah. I'm just going to assume that if people are being blown up, that you blew them up. And I'm going to work with that premise. And then Walt Jr. comes in. And so this is where I think we're going to see, and this is what I love about the show, this is where I think we're going to see some real character development play out. Walter Jr. comes in and he's just flowing with all of this love
excitement
for Uncle Hank.
Right.
And Walt Sr. can't take that shit. He cannot take Hank getting any kind of credit, you know, for any of this stuff, because he's doing all of it. And you can see he's the one thing he's burning for is for Walt Jr. to know.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think that's going
to
be
impress
downfall.
Him with how much money he's made,
the money, the things money. He's done.
One of the interesting things, even before Walt Jr. comes in, I really like the way that Cranston now is just the way he walks when he's cleaning up all the bomb materials.
Right, right.
Just the way he carries himself, he seems almost like so much more tough now, so much more like
it's just very
scary.
Cold.
Right, and cold, too.
I would say the thing that I found really intriguing about this episode is that every single person changes.
Yes.
Mm.
We're seeing a transformation. Mm.
Everyone has changed.
Including Hank.
Yes, yeah. Everyone has changed. Everybody's physically walking a little different. Even Saul's hand gestures are a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's very serious. And they even accented that with the sound design by dropping the bass and the voices even more.
Yeah, it's like shaking the
as
house.
As well as they have this, some of the music cues. Mm-hmm. There were some spectacular ones during the whole magnet bomb thing, a truck thing. Mm-hmm. But it is. There's this serious, ominous. We've gone into some really
gravitas.
Yeah,
very dark.
It's gotten. Although
it's
there
almost
a
gloomy.
Couple of funny moments.
It's almost gloomy. There was some funny moments, but it was just very like, oh my god.
Yeah.
We have just gone into Hades with these guys.
Right.
And they're different. They have gone through a journey, and they're all different. So it's gonna be interesting to see It's like they're starting the season almost at the end.
Oh, in terms of
a classic Joseph Campbell, you know, right. plot character thing. Exactly. Whatever. It's like, all right, everyone has changed. Ta-da, end of the story. But it's not. It's like, okay, there's a new story. Now that they are here and there are these changed people and everyone's very serious. And, I mean, he declares that he's won.
Right.
But now absolutely no one likes or trusts him.
Right.
Right. No. Yeah, he's got no...
except for Jesse.
Everyone
Jesse still except for Jesse.
Yeah, but all of a sudden, yeah, Jesse's willing to give his life for him. And I'm like, Jesse, this guy's been torched. I know, but Jesse, this guy's been an ass to you for all these seasons.
He's always making fun of you and belittling you. Is Jesse ever going to find out about the girlfriend?
About
that,
Jane?
That could
or
come
about
back.
The son? Yeah,
or either one. Well, the poisoning, he can probably hide that. At some point, he almost slipped about Jesse.
I think that would definitely be a limit for Jesse. Jesse has such a soft spot for kids. Yes.
I think the Jane, so like the Baldies were talking about this. Bald Move, by the way, is the, I want to shout out to the Bald Move. Anybody who likes Breaking Bad, go over and listen to Breaking Bald. That is the podcast that inspired us, you know, just a couple guys who love Breaking Bad and Mad Men, and they started casting and said, hey, man, they're doing a good job. Jokes. I think I could do that too. Yeah. Anyway, one of the ideas, the conversations they had a prediction show last week before the premiere, mm-hmm. was the Jane thing, and their kind of idea was that Jane got played out in Bug. You know, when he almost came to the point of confessing about her,
right? Yeah,
or he sort of did, and Jesse didn't get the context of it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that Jane's going to come back.
Yeah.
On him. Probably. She might. But I think the kid will.
The kid might, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that was pretty
dark. Or maybe the kid and Jane. You know,
yeah. Maybe he will just, it will be like in The Shield, to just confess everything all
the time. Well, there's more evidence on the kid, and it's, I want to say it's more recent than I keep remembering this entire show has only taken place in the course of a year. Jane died like 3 months ago.
Right, yeah. Wasn't that long.
Wasn't that long ago. This airplane crash would still be the top news story. You know?
Yeah, probably. Well, a guy blowing up in an old age home. Would probably be pretty
airline
big news
crashes,
too.
Yeah, it would be
both would be big
it.
News.
Yeah.
It's a busy town. Yes. He's brought a lot of activity.
Liked it when he comes home and he's talking to Skyler and he's like, "Can I at least get a hello?" Yeah. It's like you got one of those Batman voice things.
But then he's nice. Skyler. Then he's nice to the baby.
I was going to say, but then Robo Baby speaks. You know, and then we see the Robo Baby. I think it's a Robo Baby.
Robo Baby.
It blinked a little artificially.
Just once in a TV show or movie, I want the family, when they have a child, to name the baby Plot Point.
Plot Point Baby.
Except this baby's not a plot point.
They keep using the baby.
It was part of it was he had to make money, not just for his wife and
his
teenage
son,
but his new daughter. So it was added incentive, you know.
It wasn't added incentive, but then they went they've gone nowhere with this baby. It's like
this is
a heavily undernurtured baby.
Mom is a little distracted.
The baby's less than a year old. Yeah. This baby is less than a year old, and the mother carries her around a lot. They're always together.
Right.
There's no breastfeeding. Well, there's no changing. I mean, a one-year-old.
We don't need to see all that.
You take care of kids.
Yeah, I take care of one-year-olds, but we don't need to see all that in a movie.
Could you take care of a one-year-old and be married to someone who's blowing up old folk homes? And also you're laundering money through a car wash.
It's Michael Corleone and his wife did it. I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah. Maybe Michael Corleone did it.
He did. Well, his wife did. Somehow.
Yeah, but Michael Corleone had partners. He had people. He could finish his work day.
Oh, God.
Heisenberg is just always running.
Yeah, stressful environments are bad for child development.
Yes.
I don't have good good hopes for that baby, unfortunately.
So who do you think is going to take out... Oh, go ahead.
The baby has to... I'm like, go back to your Chekhov thing. I say the baby goes into jeopardy.
Yeah, at some point.
Otherwise, why do we have this thing?
Gus threatened the baby.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, he threatened his family.
And already we've seen from last season that kids are not off limits.
Right, yeah.
No, not off anybody.
Yeah.
Well, and Jesse might. See, that's the place to go, is if Jesse finds out that his girlfriend's son
Jesse would attack another baby.
Yeah, I don't think he'd do that.
We don't know where we're taking Jesse.
You know what I'm thinking, though? Here's something. It was a total throwaway, but for some reason it stuck to me. In the first season, Jesse's Facebook page says he likes MILFs.
Yes.
And I thought, wait a minute, is he going to wind up with
Skyler?
Ooh. That,
that's what I thought.
She's a MILF.
She's a MILF.
You know,
that would totally fuck things up brilliantly.
No, no, no. Who she needs to stand up with is Skylar's sister.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. That'd be wild.
Because Hank is the one.
Because she does like money.
She does like money, and Hank is the one he has a vendetta with.
And she likes thrills
yeah,
too.
She's like, yeah, he's like, I'm right. gonna fuck your life up.
I could totally
I'm
see
date
her.
Your wife.
I could totally see her fucking Jesse.
Who, Marie?
Yeah.
For a thrill ride, because that's part of her kleptomania.
Well, she's a bad boy chaser. That's why she's with Hank.
Exactly. Yeah. She's a bad boy chaser, and she is very vain and wants and a younger guy and money and fast living.
And he'll take good care of her, and she can buy all the purple crap she wants. She can,
I don't think that's gonna happen, but I'm saying Jesse and Skylar.
He's got to get with a MILF though. Yeah,
that would be something.
Jesse, well, he was underparented.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, he kind of seeking out the older women.
We definitely.
You're fun to have here, Andrew. You're getting us thinking. This is great.
Thank
you. So okay, so we have Robo Baby. We have Skylar fears the Heisenberg, and then we have Walt stands up. Oh shit.
Yes.
Oh no, we can do the Batman. Oh shit. You know, he realizes that Gus had cameras on them.
Yes.
You know, and now the thing is, I gotta believe that Gus didn't keep a whole big backlog of tapes of activity at his methamphetamine super lab.
One would have
whatever's
been
in the cache on his laptop.
Maybe like automatically erases the day before with the new one.
I also gotta believe his hard drive was probably pretty heavily encrypted for a guy that cautious.
But I also believe the police are good at that.
Breaking decryption is not easy.
In a major drug case, I'm sure they'd find a way.
No, it's just, I mean, it's mathematically, it's just not, it's impossible. You try, if I encrypt a system and say, look, after 100 failures to enter the right code, just burn down. You can't.
Maybe. Yeah. What I like was, I like the cut from Waltz basically saying, oh shit, to we see a dark, you know, room and we see the crutch coming down.
Right.
From,
stepping into the shit
from Hank, stepping down into it. That was nice. It's like, okay, Walt thought of something at the same moment that Hank's about to find it.
Right.
You know, that was.
He
good.
Sees, finds the camera with Gomi.
Yeah, I like the chemistry between him and Gomi. I think. It's
me
fun.
Too. I like Hank and Gomi. What I want to know though is, there's a lot of speculation on the web that Gomi is dirty. That he's an inside man of the DEA. He hasn't been throwing enough curveballs at Hank.
Yeah,
I don't think for him to be dirty.
No.
But I think I want to find out something special about Gomi, because he hasn't had anything change about him. We're just,
he's not in it enough. He's
just the same Gomi
we've
always had.
The funny guy who's a sidekick, who, you know.
Yeah, so, something. Just
he's
little,
a sounding board
give us a little something
Hank.
On Gomi. Just a little. And I was thinking that maybe like Gomi, after the show's over, Gomi and Badger can get a show. We can call it Gomi and the Badge.
You know, I always thought from The Shield they should have had a spinoff Back to the Shield with Dutch and the CCH Pounder character.
Yeah.
They were good.
They were good people, though.
So right, yeah. They were there premise. To say, okay, not all cops are corrupt.
Right.
That was the whole idea.
Closest thing we got to a spinoff from The Shield is Sons of Anarchy. It's not clear whether or not it takes place in the same universe, but they have the same gang. They have the same gangs. Fictional gangs.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah.
And Dutch was in that not as himself, but he was in it as another obsessed Fed who ends up. I don't want to get off on Sons of Anarchy, but you gotta love a show where your girlfriend comes back into town because she's being stalked by a Fed. She shoots him, you kill him, and then you have sex in the room with the dead body. Because that is how classy that show is.
That's how Kurt Sutter rolls, man.
Yeah, and this is like...
Maybe I do need to watch this now.
Yeah, no. Oh, there's a whole season about chasing a baby.
Yeah, there's a whole baby chasing season.
Maybe that's what Breaking Bad needs.
Yeah, anyway.
I think you'd get a kick out of Sons of Anarchy.
It's on the streamings.
Okay,
check it out.
I'll probably check it out sometime.
Let me put it this way. If you watch 3 episodes of Sons of Anarchy and you're not into it, you're not going to be into it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like it changes a whole lot. There's a lot of anarchy. All right. So Hank in the super lab. Speaking of Hank stepping in the shit.
Yeah.
Steps right in the shit. So, and then you got the Patton reference. I listened to this like 100 times. I couldn't hear who he was saying is a magnificent bastard.
Oh.
He's like, Shrem, you magnificent bastard.
Yeah, I didn't catch it.
I didn't catch it.
It may have just
been, I thought it might be Fring or Heisenberg. Fring, it wasn't Heisenberg.
Fring, probably.
Yeah, I thought that might have been, or Gus, you Magnificent Bastard, or something like that.
Yeah.
But the whole, the patent thing, and the fact
that
also...
That was a funny line.
So here's Hank, and he was, you know, pretty sure he was onto something with Fring, but he didn't have it all together, and he was kind of being talked out of it by his coworkers, but now he knows.
Right.
Right, and he knows that Fring is not the top of the pyramid. There's no way. So... he's going to be Terrier at this point. He's unstoppable on this on this case. He's, I mean, there's nothing. I don't. I mean, he's he knows he's on it.
Right.
You know.
Well, there has to be. It's. I can't imagine the show ends without him ever finding out about Walt.
No, no. It's got to be. It's leading to Walt versus Hank, I think.
Yeah.
The question is Walt. What do you guys think? Is Walt versus Hank going to be the final confrontation?
No.
Walt versus Jesse? Walt versus Skyler?
Walt versus some drug lord.
I think Walt versus Jesse.
I think it might. Walt versus Jesse or Walt versus Skyler.
What if Jesse becomes his rival drug lord and that's who he's buying the machine gun for?
I think
it'd be personal.
Personally, I think Jesse's going to break good.
Maybe.
Go to Hank?
Not necessarily go to Hank, but he's going to do... I think he's... because he's just starting to show some intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And...
it's only been a year, bitch.
He's had a few minutes...
I mean,
now that he's off,
he was the smart one
on this episode.
On this episode, for a change, he was also the most empathetic. He empathized with people and wanted peace and solutions, and was willing to die for it. I think we're looking at him growing and wanting to get out and be clean, and that threatens.
Well, I think they definitely made the choice in season 3 to make Jesse the character you empathize with the most.
Yeah, but he changed.
And they're taking him to here.
When I said everybody changed, he changed too. And he got serious, but not in the serious gloomy way that other people are getting.
Mm-hmm.
He got serious and I want peace and I'm going to fight for it.
Right.
I want, you know, to clean things up. I'm going to fight for it. I actually, he knew something about science. He's the one that came up with
magnets. Yeah,
and usually he's being, you know, constantly bitch slapped by his ex-teacher always telling him what a fucking idiot he is. You know, so I...
That was...
Well, Jesse's the guy that I want to win. He's the guy I want to end up on top.
Yes.
I'm Team Jesse.
But I think that's where it's going to be. That's where the most... Because for them to switch on each other like that would be the most powerful thing, too.
Yeah, I could see that being a good ending.
I think it's going to be like Jack and Locke on Lost. Walter's just going to be a smoke monster at that point. Just going to fight it out on an island.
I love the fact that Jesse still calls him Mr. White.
Yeah,
even after all they've been through.
God damn, Mr. White.
Yeah.
Mr. White.
Even when the truck is falling over from the magnets.
Well, that's, you know, again, speaking of the Tarantino, that's Reservoir Dogs. Mr. White and Pinkman.
Right.
Mr. Pink.
Yeah.
Right. So they did that on purpose. They're supposed to be Mr. White and Mr. Pink.
The irony of Mr. White going dark.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
But you know, Jesse Pinkman is played a lot like Mr. Pink, except for Mr. Pink was intelligent from the beginning, except for that he came back to the rendezvous, which is just about the dumbest thing you could ever do. I have the diamonds. I'm leaving town.
I'm leaving town,
If I want to be a good guy, I'll notify my coworkers, if any of them survive,
later,
that their share will be available because I'm a good guy.
But of course. Not, Well,
So, okay, so I think Hank now is going to be on an Ahab trip here. I mean, I think
he has been already,
but now he's
just... He's going to say, no, it's not over.
And he's going to have some resources, because before he had Gomi and everybody else telling him, just go play with your minerals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
Who takes up mineral collecting when they get paralyzed?
Also, well, I...
what else are you going to do?
Well, it's a big physical hobby that requires a lot of space.
Well, it's very... I thought it was really odd when they introduced that, because it was also like, okay, we're dealing with crystal meth, and he's collecting crystals.
Crystals, yes. Yeah. I think that was the reference there.
I thought that was a little contrived, so I'm curious to see if it pays off in any way.
Right. Or that it's just... or that it was just, you know, subconscious on Hank's part. It's very clear to me that they picked minerals because it's crystal. And he was like collecting. He wanted to be like looking at the blue. Chris, he's obsessed with crystals, but it just seems like a very awkward hobby for someone who's, you know, can't move to be collecting large boxes of minerals.
Well, remember, I in a previous cast, I said that I think that Hank kind of knows
about Walt.
Mm-hmm. I think he likes to tease him.
I think he's got a little radar going off about Walt.
I think he's in awe, and I think he likes to play with him like a mouse. Because I don't think he's a big tough guy and really wants to take him out. Yeah. But it keeps him relevant if he knows.
You and I have
because if he actually if they actually solve it, he becomes irrelevant and he's out of a job.
Wow. Oh, no, he becomes a hero, though, don't you think?
He becomes a hero. He nails Heisenberg.
Right. But
he's related to Heisenberg.
But how do you... Yeah, exactly. How do you resolve... He probably hasn't figured out how to handle that. And also, the chase.
So if you're right...
Because they established him. Remember when they established that character? And it was all about this macho chase going into this house.
Right.
When Pinkman escapes it.
Right.
And, like, in the first season. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, teasing him with this and taking him on a drive here. And
then Walter's an accident, which is highly contrived.
He's totally... I still think he kind of knows.
So if he's onto Walter right now, then he has to... And I think it's a very intriguing theory. Uh-huh. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I hope you're right. You're right. Because if you are, then Hank's at the point where he has to start deciding whether he's going to protect Walt or find him out through some, you know, or find
I
him
think
out.
He's enjoying the cat and mouse game.
Maybe.
But it's almost like he's Breaking Bad a little bit by not turning him in. But it does. It makes him feel like he's got a purpose. He loves the puzzle.
But
he loves the macho punt and takedown.
There was a moment, though, where he thought he had gotten the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was Walter, after a few too many glasses of wine, who said, oh, that guy. The guy.
That was Dale Bennett.
The error.
Boddicker.
Yeah, Dale Boddicker. Yeah, yes. And he was saying, oh, it couldn't possibly be that guy.
Right, and Skyler like, just staring daggers at him.
That was a great moment. But I don't know. To me, it really
I thought he was
like
teasing
he
him. I thought he was teasing him.
I don't know. I think since he was almost killed by two hitmen, I don't think he would... at that point be teasing anybody.
I still do not believe that he has the conscious thought Walter White is Heisenberg. Yeah. I think he likes to tease Walter anyway, and I think he does have some suspicion that Walter's involved somewhere near this because of the Pinkman because of the Pinkman connection while looking for Walter
and White. He's come out and said things like this guy needs to know all about chemistry, needs to have access to this stuff.
I think he's got
knows about the theft at the high school,
but I think he's in denial.
Yeah,
I think he. I don't think he's got the. I think that if he ever, he's going to put that equation together consciously at some point, and that's going to be a moment, because I think we want that dramatic moment on the show. We want this moment where Hank figures it out, and if he's already been figured it out this whole time, we don't get that. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a subconscious version of what you're talking about. It's my own thing. And
we're about to enjoy. We're about to enjoy 15 more juicy episodes.
Yeah, I think he'll get this like reveal. And then he'll be like, of course, when this happened, of course, the accident. It'll all be like, how could I be so stupid? How could I? Yeah, I think that it's going to be more like that.
Probably.
But I'm rooting for your theory, though, because I think that's the best one. I've known all along
watching,
protecting you.
Not so much protect you. I'm just dicking with you and enjoying the chase and living through this vicariously.
That's true, but there has to be an end game. There has to be some idea.
Yeah.
It's a question. He'd really be screwing his career up if he didn't.
Right.
But is he on medical leave or something?
He was.
No, he's working now.
He's working now, okay.
He's had a whole 5 months of physical therapy. He's walking again from a paralyzing gunshot.
Right.
This is Breaking Bad time, baby.
I honestly thought he was going to die. That was an extremely intense scene when the two guys tried to kill him.
Yeah.
It was very well done.
And he was in convenient character that time, so killing him off would have been something that... it's what George R. R. Martin would have done.
I thought
he was going to. All right, so moving on. We have Hank at the Super Lab. Magnificent Bastard. Oh, then we got Mike now. So we got Mike the cleaner, and he's feeding his chickens.
They have
the traffic Mexico lighting. When you're in Mexico, everything is orange.
Everything's orange.
The sky is orange. Yeah. You're orange. The world is orange.
Well, it's
Mexico
because
is orange.
When most people think of Mexico, they think of hot. They think of heat.
And pollution.
And pollution.
But
so
there's no pollution out in the weeds in Mexico. It's in the cities. You know,
fine.
But still. Okay.
Yeah. And it did kind of bother me, the coincidence of the two cars just
happening.
Yeah,
they talked about that on the Insider cast.
Right.
And the Villigan said, it never bothered me. People have been complaining about it. I thought it was fine.
It seemed a bit of...
He said, Mexico's only got one big long road.
There's more than one.
It is a little bit of a coincidence. I don't know that I want to see a lot of screen time establishing how they would meet. And
they were going to talk on the phone or something.
How does Mike going from feeding the chickens to playing chicken?
Yeah. There you go.
I love that chicken, and they cross each other. That's like one of the For that shot, I'm willing to forgive a lot. Yes, you got to think about it for Dog Patch. It's like two cars coming at each other at moderate speed, playing chicken.
Yes.
Past each other. Dog Patch is a film that we might be working on later on that involves a car chase. So Mike gets the news that Fring is dead, and he goes out, and it looks like he's going to go basically. Now, what Villigan said was that the intention here is that Mike was going to go kill Walter. That's the plan.
Hmm.
Why?
At revenge. He actually had some loyalty to Gus.
To Gus, no, he's a gun for hire, and Mike's also a very cautious guy, murdering somebody else in the middle of this massive investigation. Somebody else who's going to be hiding and not, who's relatively trustworthy on this particular issue.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like Walter is a loose thread in something Mike has done.
That's true.
Right? Mike is a loose thread in something Walter's done. Right? So Walter's not likely to come after you. It seemed like, you know, his rage was a little bit premature. Mm. But also here we have another Chekhov's cough. Mike is, when he's feeding the chickens, he gives a couple of coughs. He just got shot. But Mike has been coughing all the way through this whole show. It's like every time he's on screen, he's got another cough.
Yes. Wow.
And then Jesse Bo Dukes his way across the across the hood of the car.
That's right. I didn't notice this.
Whoa, Mr. Cleaner Man. Gotta listen to Mr. White.
I thought that was a great scene.
That was good.
That might be my favorite scene.
It was very tense.
The other one I really liked was when Hank and they do a steady cam. It looks like a steady cam. Might be a big jib.
Uh-huh.
Three or about 180 around him while he's just like taking in the totality of the...
Of the super...
Light. That was a gorgeous...
That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
I'm really liking Jesse, Mike, and Hank as kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yes, I do too.
You know, it's like...
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, the three of these guys, the intensity of the energy between them and the character play.
Yes.
Now that, especially that Jesse's loyalties are split between them.
And Mike just gets a lot of funny lines.
Mike is great.
This is the universal symbol, forgive me the keys.
Yes. Yes.
This is the universal symbol for keys. Yeah, I love that. And then he does his mail fraud. He's Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five.
Such an odd detail.
It's before your time.
Call me anytime.
Call me
day
anytime.
Day or night.
It's like, oh yeah, we're screwed. The laptop is in there. Now here's the thing I've got to wonder. Modern laptops.
Yes.
Which we actually haven't seen one in the show. We've only seen 4 or 5 year old laptops. Modern laptops all have solid state hard drives, which are immune to demagnetization.
Uh-huh.
Because just they're different. They're solid state. They don't have the spinning plates. And it's becoming a crucial issue, although I guess it's kind of a science fiction show in a lot of ways, so you can kind of just place it anywhere you want. But it's like, what year is it on this show? Because it's only been 1 year out of four seasons going into the fifth one. And the first season was 2007.
Right.
So if you take it to be 2007, we don't have smartphones, we don't have solid-state hard drives and laptops, we have clunky laptops that can be demagnetized. I mean, a lot of technology popped in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wow. We don't have a lot of things like that, you know, we don't have social networking working the same way as it does now. And so a lot of people are asking, it's like, for example, the first couple of seasons, it's like, why do they still have answering machines and newspapers? Which almost nobody has anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
could the
boonies. It's the boonies.
Yeah, no, well, it's true.
We live in an extremely hip. We live probably in the most hip city in the country for sure, right. Probably possibly the world. So we take a lot of this for granted. But when I go just an hour away and go into people's homes, people still have all this normal stuff.
There is a boonie quality. I'll give you that. But it's much more about trying to place the show in a year. So it's like we've seen these disposable phones that we knew came out in 2004.
Right.
So we know it's at least 2004.
No, those came out before then, I thought.
That particular model.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the reason it's important is because enough has changed in the last few years so that like the plans that Walter's going to pull off, you know, you have to think, can he get an iPhone?
Yeah,
you know, can you get an iPad? That kind of thing,
right.
You know. But so Jesse has this Dell laptop that looks like, you know, something Fred Flintstone would have had. It's like a huge, ginormous laptop, you know, circa 2007. Okay, so Jesse has this like, you know, huge laptop, and they're doing this magnet test.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's part of the things that I'm thinking about is like, well, you know, what kind of laptop does Gus have? So I guess they're showing us everything.
Yeah.
So the Dave Clark meter thing. And then, so I love the bit. So now, speaking of Mike and Walter and Jesse. So Mike and Heisenberg. And by the way, it is just Heisenberg. At this point, there is no Walter White.
Yeah,
he's pure Heisenberg.
He's no longer a professor.
Bruce Wayne is gone. Teacher. It's all Batman from here on in.
Yeah.
And they break bald at each other. They're like, let me describe Fort Knox to you if you want to describe the crew.
Yeah, that's a great
Oh,
scene.
Yeah, I knew a crew in Fort Knox. Yeah. You know, in Fort Worth, they tried what you're going to do, and they didn't do shit. So I'm just talking about a little bomb in there. They got Halon. They got stuff that can kick your ass from here.
Yeah,
and right. Jesse's in the back. He's not even in focus. He's
right, he's standing in between them, out of focus, saying, a magnet.
Magnets, bitch.
Magnet,
yeah,
magnet.
Juggalo yeah. Jesse's over here saying, how right. do they work? Magnets, bitch.
Yeah. I love that.
And
yeah.
I love it's the first moment where Jesse is like two steps ahead of,
but then when they finally listen to him, he's kind of like, a magnet would go shoosh. He doesn't really
yeah, he's
know.
Like, poosh.
Yeah, ah. See, wouldn't that work?
That's all you need. That's better than a bomb. You know?
It is better than a bomb. Yeah, so definitely.
He said, blowing up an old folks' home wasn't enough for you.
Yeah, that was funny.
You want to blow up a police station. I'm not going to blow up a whole police station. Just the evidence
we
locker.
We just put it in the evidence locker. A device.
So they're not going to check a device in the evidence. What is this device?
Well, he's thinking out loud.
You know, the other thing we got is, first of all, we return to the junkyard with the junk guy. A nice callback on that.
Yes. Yeah, and he's funny, too.
He's pretty funny.
He's a good character.
And and basically, like, Mike, it's not clear to me at this point why he isn't just beating feet completely. I mean, he talks about it. He's like prepared
yeah,
to deal with.
He keeps saying, I'm going to get out of here.
He's prepared to deal with being caught on
camera
doing
things. Because he wants the computer to be wiped.
I guess he just has to buy into this thing, but he's so skeptical about it. It's like, if you're going to be in the plan, let's be supportive, you know?
It's his nature.
He's
not skeptical about
guy.
Everything.
Yeah,
he's not a. He's a cynical, funny guy. Yeah. That's his whole deal.
I love when he's the guy says, "We'll get through with this, and then we'll have Miller time." And he says, "I can think of lots of ways this is going to work out, and Miller time isn't one of them."
That was a really good line.
That was really
yes.
good.
He's very good at that kind of thing.
And then the Mexican standoff, he says, Jesus, Jesse, what is it with you guys?
Yes.
And I'm like, well, it's a May-December bromance.
Yes. Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
That's what they have going on. So, let's see here, rolling through here. And so, the junk man is it possible to make a magnet powerful enough to do what you can do? He's got one of those car lifting magnets.
Right,
he's
right.
like, hey, we're living in the age of string theories and God particles. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure magnets still work the way we all thought they did a few years ago.
Well, you know, that's a funny way
the
to
God,
talk.
If you're working on the Higgs boson over here in the Albuquerque junkyard. And then we have, we have a segment that we like to do every now and again on the show called Yeah Science.
Yay, science.
Yeah, science.
Yeah, science, okay.
And the Yeah Science moment, and they also talk about this in the Insider cast. You get a little bit of a vague hand wave on this from Vince Gilligan, because the expert that they brought in was somebody on their crew, like an 18-year-old producer or whatever, who mm-hmm. knows this stuff. But Gilligan doesn't, so he just sort of like, this kid knew some stuff. So the magnet setup, basically, they have all these batteries in parallel, and there's two ways you can hook up a battery. You can either hook up a battery in series, and when you hook up batteries in series, you increase the voltage that the battery array will produce, but the amperage, which is what are called amp hours, which is essentially a measure of how long the system will operate and how much current will be flowing during that period of time, that stays the same and the voltage goes up. Okay, so the amp hours stay the same, the voltage goes up. When you connect them in parallel, so that the not in series, but so that each terminal is connected independently to the target, the voltage stays the same. So if you have 12 volts, no matter how many batteries you put in parallel, they stay at 12 volts. But the amp hours go up. So what we got to see here was the junk man put together one battery array. And they even do the math on the show. It's 12 volt batteries, like a car battery is 12 volts. 21 of them creates 252 volts, which is what you need to power a large.
Go Jason's big brain.
But with only one array, they don't have that many amp hours, which means you have a 250 volt magnet that'll go off for a very short period of time, and then the batteries will melt down. So what you do is you make two or three of those in parallel. So you, every time you do, you double the amount of time that the system can run. So what Walter was asking for there was not for more power, but for more time. Mm. So when he says up the amperage, it's not, this is something that the people who know a little bit about electrical engineering will might get confused by. When he says up the amperage, he's not saying up the current, which parallel batteries would not do. You would not increase the current. It's increase the amount of time that the system will run, which is an amp hour, which is an amperage. And that is our yeah science moment for the day. Yeah, magnets, bitch. Yeah, bitch, magnets.
And I noticed I did not contribute anything to the science moment.
You know, I just said
yeah, science, yeah, and just sort of like, let's all just
I have a degree in electrical engineering because big brain. I like computers, and when I was I'm old enough that when I went into college, they didn't really have computer science as a separate thing, so they made me take electrical engineering, which I despise.
Wow.
And hate deeply, but I know a lot about.
That's
actually, I liked it in the lab. I liked all this battery hookup stuff. That was a lot of fun. What I didn't like was circuit analysis and design. I'm like, just wanted to pound my head into the ground. But anyway, so they have the test run out in the junkyard. Let me see what else I got.
It's a clever scene.
We got the philosopher junk man. And then here's something, we established something here that I want to hear what you guys have to think about it. I think it's just to create the plot point, just to clarify where we are with the plot. But Walter has to borrow his share
right.
of what will probably be something in the neighborhood of $100,000
yeah.
from Jesse.
Yeah, he doesn't have any money. Cause
right, so they have to buy the vehicle, they have to buy the magnet, they have to buy all these batteries, they have to buy the guy off. I got to figure that's low six figures to get into that.
I guess the car wash is not paying off the thought the way they.
Well, no, because the Beneke money, right? So Skyler took the money and gave it to Beneke, and then he only didn't have enough left for to. They showed in the crawl space he didn't have enough left to erase all their lives, but that was going to be like $5 million or something crazy like that. And so the question is, how much money does Walter have? It looks like it's not even like he could barely put his hand to like five figures, you know, very easily. Which means we know that Walter doesn't do well when there's not a lot of money around.
So he's going to, I'm sure he and Jesse are going to have to start cooking again. They'll just have to.
I mean, we've seen some teaser spoilers that suggest they're going to cook. You got to cook. I mean, cooking is like.
It's his thing. What else?
It's like a lightsaber fight in a Star Wars movie. You got to have them.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, at this point, you know, he's basically.
But he needs customers. They have no distribution. Right. They have no cartel connections. They have to start over again.
Well,
with our new serious, deeper voices.
They do have Mike. He may know someone.
He's not a drug dealer.
He might know somebody.
Maybe.
He worked for a drug dealer. He could work for another one. You never
know.
I'm sure they
could. There's also... There are other cartels. But I think it's going to be Madrigal Electromotive.
I think
that's who's coming. I think the title of the next episode is Madrigal. That's who was back in Gus. That's who is building meth super labs around the world. And I think that the Madrigals are going to be the ones who he ends up having to do business with.
It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. But yeah, they definitely need, they have nowhere to go to earn any particular amount of money. Because we've seen from Jesse, his street dealing, he can't pull in more than a couple of grand a week. There's only so much business at the...
One guy can...
At the Taco Cabeza. Yeah,
you know. Yes.
Absolutely. So, then there's this little bit where, you know, Mike is like, you should take that money and disappear and get out. He's, you know, Mike, you're talking to yourself. What are you doing standing here? Yeah. And Jesse's like, look, this only works if you're in. And he does this little like forward head cluck thing. He's like, huh, bitch. So Jesse has actually, you know, not only was he the smart one in this season, but in this episode, but he actually puffed up at Mike.
Yep.
Just slightly. Yeah. So Jesse's becoming the man.
Yeah, I tell you, it's going to be between Jesse and Heisenberg.
Yeah. Walt, yeah.
It's like the X-Men. It's like Magneto and Dr. Xavier. Also both bald.
Well, I was thinking more like it was the show, like in the show Dexter, when it was inevitable that his sister was going to have to find out that he's...
Yeah, yeah, and... Spoiler alert, she has found out. So yes. We're going to see how that turns out.
Right, same idea.
I thought it was weird that she was falling in love with him, though. I didn't like that whole angle.
That was bad.
It's bad. Let's just lose that. Let's just drop
that.
But
she is just a weird character.
She's a weird character, but that's not an interesting storyline because he's not going to go for it, you know, and just forget it.
Yeah.
You know? Unless she decides to start killing with him. But I will watch next season because I have been saying about Dexter for 4 years that they need a game changer. They need to change the premise, and now they have.
Now they have, yeah. We'll see. Now he's got to go on the run or something.
Okay, so Walt borrows money from Jesse, and then we're at the car wash. At the car wash, and Skyler is surfing over the crime net, checking out all of the crimes that have been going on. And Gus Fring is definitely ruled a homicide because old people don't accidentally explode. It happens sometimes. People just explode.
There are too many old age homes with a lot of explosives. So
it's like, and he blew up this old man and like right next door after waving at the woman next door.
Well, she's like in there. He wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah. She'll be fine. She's sitting over on the other wall.
What he had to do.
He had to do what he had to do. And then Saul comes in to notify her that we now have the living Ted. Right.
That we all, Ted, we had Ted all did not die. We weren't
Ted
sure.
We weren't sure, but I was like, oh, I guess they just got rid of Ted storyline or whatever.
Right. Threw no,
him,
he's got to be
They threw
part
him under
it.
The rug. So Ted, and what do we think about the Ted storyline here? I think this is not good.
I think he's a great idiot character, a real egotistical jerk.
He's a good
I think
fake
that
shimp.
He will,
yeah.
Huh?
A fake shimp.
Yeah.
Is what Sam Raimi calls him. The character just gets slapped around and is sometimes a dummy.
Right. Yeah.
Well, now he's become a liability, so they're going to kiss his ass a bit, but he is just worthless.
I think
Heisenberg's... I'm like...
Walt may eventually kill him.
They brought him back for something. It better be fucking good, because he's not a character I would have brought back.
He may turn her in, and he may try and turn her in to save himself in some way, and then Walt will have to take revenge.
That could be it. But I actually think the thing is that Walt here has got bigger fish in the world. I think this is Lady Heisenberg Begins. Because when she came to the hospital, were those sincere tears?
No.
Or was she working that shit up?
She was working
it
up.
She was working that shit up,
exactly.
She's like, oh, Ted.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Ted.
And then when
my darling.
And then when he says, you know, I won't talk,
and
she's
like, good.
Yeah.
Then she goes, Bruce Wayne, good.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, no, she's...
That
she is gone totally cold and phony. She's completely broken. Yeah, she's totally broken bad. And I don't think...
I think she's killing him.
She might kill her own husband.
No, I think she's killing Ted.
She might kill her own husband, too.
She might kill Ted.
Well, we talked about that. Was like I think that the confrontations that are coming are Walter versus Jesse, Walter versus Hank, and Walter versus Skyler.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of what order they're going to come in and whether there'll be a team-up, whether it'll be Hank and Jesse versus... It could be all three of them inside of a prison complex that he has to break into with a machine gun.
I don't think so.
But I think Ted is going to be how Skyler breaks bad. He's been her break bad this whole time.
Yeah.
Every time she gets close to him, she breaks bad.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
And he's such a...
And he's such a douche.
Douchebag. We really don't like him.
Such a weasel. And we want to see him suffer. See, I would have brought him back just to watch him suffer.
That may have been part of
it. He's the anti-Jesse.
He's already suffering. That's for sure.
He's committing less heinous crimes than Jesse Pinkman, but I want to see him suffer more. He's just doing embezzlement. Embezzlement isn't murder, right? And it's just embezzlement for tax evasion. It's not like he's stealing from nuns,
right?
He's stealing from his own business to pay the taxes on his own business, right? And so compared to murder and blowing shit up and all that other stuff, poisoning children... But here's my prediction. He's going to get the business end of a rice and cigarette.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe. If Walter takes him out, it'll be with the rice in. Because that's the kind of thing that even in a hospital, they can't figure out what's going on with you till after you're dead.
Yeah. You know? Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, who knows how long he'll be in the hospital.
That's at least 6 weeks.
No. Okay.
Yeah. If not 12. Let's see here. Okay. What else we got? We're coming to the end here. We got the Scarwood. And Saul's like... I want you to think Hogan's Heroes.
Yes.
Like this is he needs a big flourishy introduction to this conversation. Rather
well,
than just,
he's just such a funny character.
Yeah.
I love him.
And I like how he said, we have a problem. And she's like, Ted's dead? And
oh, God. I was thinking of Pulp Fiction.
Oh, Ted's dead, baby.
Ted's dead, baby. Ted's dead?
It's like, no, if Ted was dead, that would be a non-problem.
Yeah, really.
It's that Ted is alive that we have a problem. We have a problem because Ted's alive. Let's see, we have magnets.
Magnet scene's great.
Also, the Junkman asks if anybody, but he keeps looking at Jesse, has a cock ring. He's like, why are you all looking at me?
It's like he was just like really into the whole idea of a... I mean, it's a legitimate question because there is
a
lot of hidden metal on people.
Pull your penis right off.
Yeah. Exactly.
That was funny.
Yeah. Why are you all looking at me? Jesse doesn't strike me as the cock ring kind
no.
of guy. But he does have a tattoo, so he is body.
Yeah.
But
he doesn't. He hasn't seemed to have a lot of girlfriends so far. He's had one.
Jeez. It's surprising that he could sit still for a tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that's like that's still like hours.
Well, that was probably
still.
Back when he was.
Bitch, it hurts. Bitch, hurry on.
Well, meth was
something else.
It's very difficult to sit still on meth.
Oh, okay. Maybe he smoked some pot.
Heroin probably would have been.
Yeah, there you go.
Heroin's what you. Well, you want to be tattooed and not remember what was happening. Junk is your stuff, man. That'll let you sleep through the whole thing. All right, so we have Walking Ted. I think I also think that they don't have that much cash left to launder, so at least their money laundering. Woes are over,
yeah.
Right? But wow. Whatever's left to launder, I think Skylar's gonna bust out Beneke fabrications. I also love that it's called Beneke fabrications, and he's like lying to everybody and fabricating. And, okay, then we have the big heist, the big break,
the big
right
magnet.
And
scene.
Again, I got this from the Insider cast. Which anybody, if you're a Breaking Bad fan, go there before you come here for sure. You can head over to AMC and you can listen to. I think it's one of the editors who runs it, and she hosts usually Vince Gilligan and a couple of other people, and sometimes they get Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston, and they just go episode by episode and talk about how they did this and how they did that. So when Mike sprays the camera, that is Wasp Killer.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they
wasp said, bug spray.
Wasp bug spray, because people don't like to get close to wasp nests. So they said this is a real thing that real criminals really do, and it is that, and the stuff is
viscous
and sticky. It sticks to whatever you spray it on. Mm-hmm. It's not water based; it's oil based, right?
So it makes it perfect.
So you can spray it for 15 or 20 feet, and it'll stick. And so he said real criminals actually do this. This is how you take out a camera is with wasp spray or something else, some other kind of poison spray where you wouldn't want to approach what you're spraying. And then they get in there, and there's, of course, I mean, this is kind of ridiculous. You would think, you know, in this post 9/11 world, it'd be a little bit tough to just roll up on a police station in a U-Haul van and start monkeying around without being caught.
They take out the camera, then he jiggers the code thing. So, I mean, that's two lines of defense right there.
Except for you think of the cameras would be set up now so that if they get taken out, an alarm goes off.
Well,
camera just went out.
Well, no, because it's he didn't take it out; he just covered it.
I know, I'm saying, but a camera can tell if it's been covered. It's like, are you seeing a big flat field? Anyway, but the point I'm willing to forgive because it's just awesome.
Fair enough. It was a fun scene, though.
Yeah, it's a fun scene.
I love the detail of the truck falling over. I thought that was just so funny. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice, like, ka-chunk. Oh, yes. Oops.
And they set it up nicely, too. It's like, I'll look out for this. Don't let it pull over.
Yeah, that's right. He said, we're going to have to go up.
The thing is that the truck would only pull over if it had a strong enough grip magnetically on something. So the evidence in the locker room wouldn't be strong enough as... To pull like a 2-ton object over or a 4-ton object over, but the steel inside the steel reinforced concrete would. So that's what you cops get for using steel reinforced concrete. Is that the truck will get tipped over. and again, listening to the Insider cast, they said, and this I have a short story to tell on this one. This strikes my little heart as an effects person.
Okay.
So evidently they had some sort of rig for tipping this thing over that was going to clear the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just be able to shoot it tipped over and they'd be fine. But it was nowhere near strong enough. Like the jack system they had was nowhere near strong enough. So they had to rig up an undercarriage jack to hold up the truck for the scene when the cops come running out.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And obviously we don't want to see that on camera. So the effects guys, they shoot a still and then they put the jack in place, and then they go in and they basically rotoscope the cops, and which is tough because they're moving. It's at night. It's blurry. The light is inconsistent. Rotoscoping is frame by frame cutouts of these figures that are in front of whatever you're trying to get rid of.
Wow.
Basically, right? Okay. So it reminded me of the film that we did Behind the Cow for Scary Cow Productions, which if anybody isn't familiar with, you should go check out Scary Cow Productions.
Yes.
This was an effects-heavy movie. I did an Iron Woman superhero. We had explosions all over the place. We had all this stuff. But the effect that actually took the most time for me to do, the one individual thing that took the most time for me to do, was we have this fantastic car. It's a Chevy, right? That was a character was trapped in, but the car we had didn't have a lock on the trunk. So I had to put a digital lock in. But we had a character monologuing in front of the trunk when he has hair that's kind of like, you know, we can see through parts of it. It was inconsistent, right? So I had to put this Chevy symbol on the trunk digitally, and then I had to go in and rotoscope out his hair frame by frame so that the so that it's not in front of his face. Right, so in a movie full of effects where people are like, well, how did you do the flight over the bridge and the explosions and the this and this all so marvelous? It's like, that stuff I had all figured out. What I didn't have figured out is how I was going to get this guy's hair out of the way of this one little shot that you probably didn't even notice was an effects shot. You know? So, and I looked at it today. I did a little, they did a much better job than I could do because they're pros. You know, yeah. They're paid to work on it all day. But I didn't catch that as an effect shot at all. The police ran right past it, and I didn't see a single rotor line or any bleeding at all. So they got some good people over there.
Well, sure. Yeah. It's a pretty high-quality show.
Oh, I also want to send out some praise for the time-lapse team. Man, what did you guys think of the time-lapse sequence?
It was nice. I don't think it was necessary. I mean, it's kind of flashy with that.
Well, they're never necessary. Yeah. Just pure photography. I mean, they've been doing this for years as part of their motif.
Yeah. I mean, it looked pretty good. But
yeah, I love their time-lapse.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
It looks nice.
I mean, I think it's showing off. It's fancy.
Right. It is kind of showing off.
Which is, it's, you know, when you're that good with a camera. Yeah. And you've got the cash.
Right.
Give us some eye candy. But it doesn't really move the story a whole lot.
No.
But it is. It's like it's candy. It's showing off. It's kind of fun. It's like, haha. And after we've done a triple somersault and we've won all the Olympic games because we're the best show, now we're going to do this thing from outer space just to really show you how great we are.
Well, no, I was just sort of praising. I was sort of praising it in a vacuum. It's like, well, you can argue about whether it fits or not, but it's like
it looked good.
Every season they do several of these sequences, and I thought this was one of the better ones because of the traffic coming to life and the city coming to life. I really liked it a lot.
It's dramatic.
Yeah,
it is.
Let's see what else I got here. So then, so they do the crank up and they get out of there with their 250 volts left there. And it's like, yeah, okay, Walter, you're comfortable leaving this magnet. Realistically, how many places could he have gotten this magnet? How many junkyards are there in Albuquerque?
Junkyards.
20? You know, I mean, these are cops, right? And
that there's not going to be a vehicle.
I mean, I'm sure the junk guy made sure that none of this could get back to him.
Right.
There are no numbers that led to him. But he, you know, it's got to lead to somebody. You know? Wow. So I leaving that shit there was not as...
That might...
Walter was very cavalier. Episode. He was very cavalier.
He's been cavalier before.
Yeah. Well, and then Mike and, like, Jesse had this look, like, when Walter said, and, you know... Mike says, how do we even know it worked? It's like, well, actually, you don't know that it worked, but we can't go back and try it again.
Right. We have to kind of work on this.
That was our best shot and we took it. You know, I can't guarantee, there's no guarantees in life. But, but he says, oh, because I said so.
Yeah, I love that. He had that cold Bond villain.
Well, and Jesse just had this look like, the fuck did you just say? And Mike and I saw the ticking in my Mike is like, you are a ticking bomb.
Yeah,
I think that sentence got Mike on, like, we have to shut this guy down or get away from him, minimum safe distance or something.
Yeah, well, Mike, that may be Mike's last episode. Who knows?
I don't know, man. I think Mike is
he's a great character, but
I think he's gonna get prominent. He's gonna continue on. I think he's...
Maybe it's because...
It's because he is a great character, as you say, yeah.
Like I said, he may know another drug dealer.
No, I don't think Mike worked for Gus. I think Mike works for Madrigal. Because he says, you don't even know what you did.
Right.
To Jesse. Do you even know what you did? Right, well, I killed the top drug dealer in the area who was trying to kill me. It's like, no, you don't know. You don't know who's coming. I think Mike has not revealed to them the extent of his involvement in this organization.
Yeah, maybe.
He's just too. I mean, he's too juicy of an actor and a character. I mean, Jonathan Banks is amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
I just love him so much.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Then they're doing the evidence cleanup, and they find Gus's Swiss bank account number.
Right.
There is one, and then we have Saul and Heisenberg with Walter saying, you know, so you gave $600,000 to my wife. It's like, hey, she's my client too. What am I going to do? And here's the thing. This is a continuity error,
yes,
possibly, in this show, but it also has a huge plot implication. which is
where's the
rice and cigarette?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he stands up and he says, "Take this thing and get out of my office."
Right.
And then we cut to Walter, and then we cut back to Saul with enough time for Walter to have picked it up and pocketed it.
Right.
But then we cut back to Walter in the same pose as though he hasn't moved.
Yeah.
And he comes around the desk and the cigarette's gone. So it's kind of vital for us to know whether Saul has the cigarette or Heisenberg has the cigarette.
Right. Well,
the Heisenberg can make more rice anytime.
Actually, it's the fact that Saul knows that he poisoned the kid, I think, is going to come up later.
Right, but I mean,
is he going to eventually tell Jesse? He might.
It's, I mean, again, the ricin thing, that is Chekhov's cigarette. If Jesse finds it in Saul's possession, he knows Saul's involved.
Right.
In lifting it off of him. He finds it in Walter's possession, he knows that Walter is involved.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If they just get rid of it, I mean, I guess he could just throw it into a river somewhere. You know, and it'll disperse.
It would be the logical thing.
Thing to do, but you know, the illogical thing to do is keep it in your desk. You know,
even in a baggie.
But but the thing is that the continuity error leaves us thinking: is that just an error, or did he pick it up, or whatever? And I don't know how they're going to play that off. You know,
yeah.
And normally I wouldn't pick on a thing like that as a plot element. I'd pick on it just because I like to pick on those kinds of things, but. I got fooled by the whole Huel lifting the cigarette off of Jesse thing last year, so I'm not going to get burned again. I'm like, no way that big 400-pound monstrosity is some kind of stage magician who can, like, pickpocket people in the middle of a frisk and they don't notice.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, evidently he can.
Apparently.
You know, and return the pack of cigarettes back to you.
Yes.
You know, at some point, I guess, is what happened there. So, where is the rice and cigarette? I think that's the big question we all have to ask. And episode by episode, I'm going to be trying to track where that cigarette is.
Where the cigarette is. And at the start of the next episode, we'll see him holding it. It's like, oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
Now, here's a question.
Sure.
For the next few episodes, do you think they're going to have more of... They're going to open it up with Walt in that future world with the machine gun.
The cold
gun.
Case?
Yeah.
Or the cold opening?
Are they going to show a little bit more of that each week?
Possibly. I don't...
And eventually we'll catch up to it? That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they did that with the airplane thing.
Right.
Right.
So what
I don't know is whether that machine gun thing comes at the end of this first half of the season or the end of the total run.
Right.
My suspicion
who
is
knows?
It's at the end of the total run.
Yeah, I think
right?
so.
So for the next 15 episodes, I don't know that we'll get 15 of them the way we did before. Because what we got before was physical action that didn't involve much human behavior. It was cleanup.
Mm.
So you could show little snippets of it.
Yeah.
And it built into this one logical whole big thing. This, they'll have to do so much reveal that I think they're going to call back to this a few more times. I don't know if it'll be every episode. I don't think it'll become a theme because...
We'll see.
We'll see. But I don't think we've seen the end of it.
Because there's all kinds of questions, so maybe they want to fill us all in.
Well, whatever, we know whatever it is takes a year to do. You know, it takes a year to get us there.
Whatever he's doing.
There's a lot between...
He's obviously made some money. So, because he's got enough money.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's got enough money for a car and an M16. Again, that's not a lot of money in Walter White's world. That's, again, you know, you're talking about...
Illegal gun sales are probably expensive. I'm guessing.
Well, an M60, yeah. But it's still $100,000, you know, $200,000,
yeah, yeah.
Something like that, which is a lot of money.
I gotta say, that was a sexy shot, though, when they revealed that's what he bought.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that made me think of because Live Free or Die was one of the last Die Hard movie.
Uh-huh.
And it is on,
by the way, as someone who graduated from high school and went to college in New Hampshire, that is on the license plate.
Yes, it is on the license plate.
And they're really into it, too.
Yeah. And then, but also the
diary reference. It's very libertarian state.
Yeah. Huh. Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho. You know, so, yeah, no, that is New Hampshire's thing. And I love it when the waitress says, free is good. Even if I was rich, I'd want free.
Yeah.
It's like, I get it. You can be rich and not free. Okay.
No, it's live free or die. So that makes me think that's probably where the show's going. If he's not free, he's going to go out dying. Or he's,
yes.
And he might take people with him.
I think freedom is the theme of this season. I think Heisenberg is trapped in a lot of ways in his own persona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his own choices and his own options. He's not free. He's, you know, and he's no longer rich. I mean, he needs to get rich again.
Yeah.
And
but he won, damn it, even though no one likes him or wants to work with him.
Yeah,
well,
but nobody's killing his infant
Jesse
child.
To work with him.
Yeah.
Not yet.
All he's got is Jesse. He really,
he,
all he's got
he
is Jesse.
He can probably get Jesse to work with him. He might be able to get Gus to work with him. I mean, not Gus. So
Mike.
Mike, to work with him. Who knows?
I think Mike is digging some holes in the desert. If I was Mike, I would. I mean, he's got a soft spot for Jesse, but Heisenberg would be dead by now. That would have happened that night. I would have, as soon as the magnet thing was happening, what I would have done is walked up and shot him in the head and left
just
his body
him there.
And just leave his body there, and now you have your problem solved. There was a guy in the car with a magnet, and somebody shot him.
Case closed.
Case closed. We're done. Let's let the police... They'll spend so much time on that, we can get to New Hampshire, where we can live free or die. So then the last little bit here, though, is coming in on Skyler, and she's freaking terrible. She looks like Diane Keaton in The Godfather.
Yeah.
This is some Michael Corleone.
Oh, that moment, yeah.
This is
very
some Michael
evocative.
Corleone shit where she tells him Ted is alive, but he's not going to talk, and he hugs her, and he's like, I forgive you.
I forgive you.
I forgive you. Joker's going to destroy the Gotham City, and I forgive you. Notice he says, I forgive you, not I'm not going to hurt him.
Yeah.
Not Ted will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yeah.
I'm not going to blow Ted up in a hospital bedroom.
Well, it's an incredibly manipulative thing to say, too.
Yeah.
It's like...
She wasn't really apologizing.
She didn't say that I was... Yeah.
But it's like, I'm basically telling you... You're on alert now. I
next
gave
time
you
I
a gift you
me.
Now owe me.
Exactly.
I just gave you this gift that you didn't ask for, but I'm making sure that you're indebted to me now. That is just one doomed marriage. It is just over.
Well,
this thing has been over for
it's been well
but it's
over for
really
a while.
Really over.
No,
now.
It actually hasn't been over for a while.
There's been some times where it seems like
oh,
she was
right.
coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's.
Yeah. I mean, she spent all of about 5 days deciding whether or not she wanted to be married to a drug dealer, and she came up with a yes.
Well,
I love that one episode, several money. Seasons back, where she goes to the lawyer, and she said the lawyer's like, she's like the anti-Saul.
Yeah.
She's like, you absolutely have to move out of the house and report your husband to the police.
Right. Yeah.
You have to do this to protect yourself and your children.
Yeah,
you do
yeah.
not want them anywhere near the lifestyle that he's going to bring
right.
you into. You don't want him anywhere
the
near
kind
the
of
associates,
yeah.
and you have to get some protection for yourself because you're in physical danger.
Yeah.
And she hears all of that, and Skyler's like a level-headed person, is the way
generally,
she's
yeah.
And she's like, well, yeah. And it's not clear why she's so deep in this because it's not for love of Walter. She doesn't love him anymore.
Yeah.
She's terrified of him.
Yeah.
But, you know, but this was before he's blowing.
No, I think she was also trying to make, you know, lemonade from lemons. Okay, so we do have a chance to get some money. Things are falling apart. How can I salvage this and get something for myself and my family?
Right.
But now she sees
she
it is just
wash.
So completely. Yeah, she just wants out, wants the car wash and get rid of him at this point.
And the car wash is legit at this point. There's nowhere money to launder.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and so
right.
just
well,
run
the fact
the,
that he's in New
car
Hampshire,
wash.
Maybe he walks, because I could see him walking away from everything.
Yeah.
Maybe he's going to take the machine gun to the car wash.
Yeah. Well, the only other thing is if the
he's got a lot of driving to do.
The IRS gets wise to her because she did that bimbo routine.
Right. Mm-hmm. That
right.
Was
and
funny.
I think we're supposed to get that threw them completely off the scent. But with Ted back alive, that means audits can still be happening.
Yes.
Her name is on all of those things. And then it's like, why do you have a car wash? Where did you get that? You know, I think there's going to be a lot of issues there. So anyway, as we said...
Remember that he said it was his gambling winnings.
That's right, but do you have a record of gambling
no,
winnings?
Of course not.
Yeah,
that's why
not.
It's gambling winnings. That was so funny when he tells
well, no,
his
but,
son.
I mean,
his son's like, that's so cool, Dad. Why are you...
Legal gambling winnings to that level have to be recorded by the casino. You can't just walk into a casino and walk away with hundreds of thousands of dollars. They tell the IRS.
Not right. If you do it slowly over a period of time at different casinos.
It's been 2 months. He won like $2 million.
But they don't know that it's just 2 months.
I know, but okay.
And they didn't spend all of it.
It's
on
a,
the car
it
wash.
Is a, I mean, what I'm saying is the IRS is already on you. I won this money in Vegas is the most paper thin excuse.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, we'll believe that. You know that they
yeah.
look. They yeah.
Yeah.
yeah no.
It's better than nothing. But
it's
it
better
is,
than
isn't much better.
It's a good cover story when no one's in particular is looking at you. You know, when the IRS is after you, it's not going to hold. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Hold. The subterfuge won't hold. You know, it's just like Mr. Wolf and his blankets in the back seat.
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, I would almost think that would be a really interesting, like, even TV story or series to watch the shenanigans people think they can pull over the IRS eyes when they come to check him out.
I'm surprised. Yeah. The is tap there a dancing. Show of that? I wonder.
Wouldn't that be great? The tap dancing, the smoke and mirrors, the obvious fuck up. Yeah. That, there might be some real stories out of that.
It's one of these cases where the tap dancing and the smoke and mirrors is good for you.
Speaking of which, there she goes. It's also, everyone that knows that we're obviously Game of Thrones fans and stuff, and our cat Snake Plissken used to interrupt all the podcasts with his yelling, and we'd have to. We have a new cat.
He has shuffled off this mortal coil.
Yes,
and we have a new House cat who is
clearly in the same personality vein as him, only significantly younger and female, and a tabby.
And her name,
Arya Stark. Because she is, in fact, a stabby tabby.
She is a stabby tabby.
She was returned twice to the SPCA for aggression. So, of course, I'm like, give her to me. So, anyways, there she goes. She's doing loops.
Hooray, stabby tabby.
Yes. Look at her go. I love her.
So, if we don't have anything... Oh, I want to give a couple of statistics I wanted to give at the top of the show, but I forgot. First of all, this is the most watched episode of Breaking Bad ever. They covered 2.9 million viewers.
Oh, not bad.
Which is a 14% improvement from last year.
It's like I was saying, always, it's the last season, last
Everybody
year
wants
episodes.
To get
Everyone
on.
That's when I started watching Lost. You know, it was last that's when I started watching Lost, was last season.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because that was a show where it's like, if you're not making it to the last season, I'm not even interested. I don't care, you know. Yeah. And then they still didn't answer any of the fucking questions.
It's telling me. Well, there's no way.
I like Benjamin Linus, though. He was worth watching.
They had painted themselves into a corner.
This episode was written by the villain, by Vince Gilligan, and directed by Mike Slobis, who was their like huge cinema.
Yes, I recognize that name.
You know, and so he cineed a bunch of the big episodes. He did like Bug and Salute.
Yeah,
and
no, he is the bomb when it comes to cinematography.
But he's only directed a handful. He directed.
Yeah, I thought, but that's impressive to see a director cinematographer come.
Well, he directed this and Kafkaesque and one other. You know, which was Kafkaesque was not like a.
Well,
huge
I think he
episode,
did a brilliant job.
But he is he's an incredible shooter, and I think he did a great job directing and working with these actors and getting these performances. Now he hasn't. Maybe that's another part of the performance issue because he hasn't directed a lot of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's performance, you say, changed a little bit. Well, this is a director they haven't worked with as a director, as you know, as much as they've worked with a couple of the others. He's only actually directed.
But it was consistent with what they were saying.
Yeah, this is only his third episode.
No,
I don't think he. No.
He still does a good job.
It was extreme. I don't think he unduly influenced it or made it like this because they really are. It's the script. He's following the script.
Well, but also like the mannerisms,
right?
And this seriousness.
But to have it consistently change like everybody. I mean, these actors are used to doing these roles. That's.
I think it's intentional as well.
I think it's very intentional, and I think it was very interesting.
Everybody's
sort of
in a groove.
I think it's incredibly interesting too.
Yeah. So it definitely has me. Back as always. I mean, this is just the best show like in history, you know. And,
yes.
And there are some good shows out there.
Yeah, I like that they are doing something a little bit different. Yeah.
I think we are in a golden age of scripted television. I really do.
I do. I think so too. Everyone thought that reality shows were just going to wipe everything up. The problem with reality shows is nobody wants to watch them again.
I can't stand reality shows. So
depends on the show. Like we got into Hoarders, we thought that was kind of fun, but not like Desperate Housewives.
See, I like the idea that Vince Gilligan. Or Aaron Sorkin, or Tina Fey, or these other really smart, talented people get in a room with other smart,
or
talented
the Wiener
people.
On the Mad Men.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Matthew
very,
Wiener.
Very smart, intelligent, talented people get together and talk about these ideas and work things out instead of, we just take a camera crew and shoot 80 hours of film
and
whittle it down to half
and
an hour.
And producers go around and try to gin up triangles and problems.
And you know, cut
Line
it in a way
out.
To make people look stupid even when they aren't, or make them look evil or bad when they aren't, or whatever.
I think it's two different things, and it depends. You know, because like for me, reality shows have a certain appeal, but I agree that like this, like Mad Men and Breaking Bad and The Shield and The Soprano, these are going to stick with me forever.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is just great literature. And they're expanding the art form of television to the point. And Breaking Bad especially is one, and also Mad Men are two shows that I can just pick a season, just watch it all day.
Sure,
I can just be
sure.
watching it all day, and it's just fantastic. You know?
Yeah.
And so I'm really appreciating what the effort they've gone to here.
In my opinion, the real turning point was The Sopranos in that here was a tele- not just because it was on HBO and because it had swearing and violence, but because here was a television show where we would have a main character who is essentially repulsive,
right,
and yet could keep our interest, and that we would not necessarily root for, but you know, enjoy watching.
Right.
And from that comes Dexter, Breaking Bad, and, you know, even Mad Men to a certain extent. The idea of,
Don Draper's a sociopath, too. They're all sociopaths.
A certain kind of sociopath, yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So
it's just he's not really a sociopath because he has empathy. But
yes,
his empathy is completely detached. He's able to just utilize it in order to be a good ad man, but he doesn't really give a shit.
Right.
Right. So he knows what you're feeling, he just doesn't care. Whereas a sociopath doesn't even know what you're feeling. But yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think it's the Sopranos definitely introduced the golden age of
the anti-hero,
of the sociopathic anti-hero. I mean, right. Even for more procedural and formulaic shows like House.
Right,
House is
yeah.
fucking and crazy and evil too.
I haven't seen House, but I'll take
it's,
your word for it.
House is an incredibly formulaic show. It has the same basic setup. Right. It has an ongoing story.
There's always vomiting blood.
But it has the same basic setup. It's basically Sherlock Holmes.
Right. So I've heard. Yeah.
And. But he, you know, has his students breaking into people's houses to as part of their medical examination, and he's like, he tortures patients in order to figure out what's wrong with them. He really doesn't care who's suffering, you know. So, yeah, we're definitely in the golden age of sociopathy on TV. So,
and then there's also a show like The Good Wife, which I really enjoy, which definitely has a very likable heroine at the center of it all. So, you know, there's still
some likable people on TV. Yes. All right, well, if we don't have anything else, any other sign-offs?
It's great to have Andrew here.
Yeah, thank you. Until next time this week.
That was fun.
I can think of a lot of ways.
I am really looking forward. Sunday can't come soon enough.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to next Woo-hoo. Sunday. Until next week, I can think of a lot of ways that this is going to go, and none of them involve Miller time.
There you go.
Water, fire, air, and dirt. Fucking magnets, how do they work? And I don't wanna talk to a scientist. Y'all motherfuckers lying and getting me pissed.